You are listening to Manish Vyas podcast episode number 1. Today we are talking about spirituality and the real practice and understanding of spirituality in India. So let's get started with Manish Vyas explaining about this wonderful subject. Today the subject is talking about the true spirituality from India. Since Manish has been connected with it since he was a child, he's going to explain us or tell us what is his experience and how it really works. He is the best example to share his experience and to tell us, okay, what is really spirituality? That is something that has been present and developing in India since thousands and thousands of years, and this is the best land to talk about it.
If you have heard the name of one enlightened man from India, namely Nisargadatta Maharaj, one of his quote was, "To know false as false, so that the real is revealed automatically." The same thing was expressed by my spiritual master Gurudev, as to see things as they are. So, to me, spirituality is to see things as they are, and to be able to see things as they are, it is important to also recognize the false as the false. Personally, my spiritual journey started very unknowingly, unconsciously, at the age of 7. You know, when one even doesn't know what is spirituality or what it means to be spiritual. I grew up in a joint family of 16 people in India, in my hometown Rajkot, Gujarat. So in this 16 people, we were 4 generations, right from my great-grandmother to my youngest cousin. At some point when I was about maybe 3 or 4 years old, my grandparents came in contact with Osho. That time he was known as Acharya Rajneesh. And Osho used to be traveling around in India, giving talks on various subjects. So he used to come to our hometown and give talks in public, where almost 5,000-6,000 people would get together in a big playground or in a big school ground. And my grandparents used to go and listen to him. And then slowly, slowly, them and then my parents also fell in love with Osho's teachings. And there was a meditation center running in the house, conducted by my grandfather. So as a kid, I used to jump into some of those meditations, without even having any idea what is meditation. But from that point, maybe a seed was planted. Growing up, listening to his talks, being part of these meditations with 10, 20, 40, 50 people. Once a month, a kirtan happening at the house. So ecstatically, you know, diving into this ocean of devotion and celebration and silence. So all these things were my surroundings of the upbringing, without really having any idea what is actually going on. About at the age of 16, 17, I moved to Pune near Mumbai, where Osho's main headquarters was there also. And Osho had just moved there from America back to India. And so again, somehow it felt like somewhere the master is taking care. I used to go to listen to his talks sometimes. He was giving talks in the morning and in the evening. I remember at the age of barely 16, 17, I asked him a question about practice on awareness. And I never thought that he would even, you know, consider answering that question. But I think it was a great compassion of a master that he actually took a question of a 16-year-old and gave a one-hour talk on that question, which still rings in my ears. So in that way, the journey continued, and after Osho left the body, I came in contact with one of his first disciples, who was also an enlightened being. And with him, the journey is still continuing. It's been 22 years since I've known my second master. We lovingly call him Gurudev. So, and with him, I have probably understood slowly what it is to be spiritual, or to be on a spiritual path, or what is spirituality. And that understanding is slowly growing since last 22 years. And what that understanding has made me realize that being spiritual or spirituality is not really about a certain kind of lifestyle of, you know, being enjoying life and, you know, not caring about anything. And, you know, many times a lot of terms are used, all I'm in the moment and it's all love. And so I realized that, in simple words, spirituality is to simply be. Spirituality is to remain conscious and aware at all times, at all cost. And that awareness, that consciousness, is not limited to when you are practicing a certain meditation technique or a certain yoga practice or sitting in meditation. But the same meditation or that same space must be carried on in the day-to-day activities, in our way of functioning, in our way of responding to the situations and people, and in our way of being. If all that state of meditation does not come into the day-to-day life, then as I understood from my masters, is that then whatever meditation or whatever practice that we have done is just a time pass. The main foundation of this understanding is that the practical aspect of spirituality. And that is why now I understand that when my master Gurudev opened an Osho mystery school in South India, he called it a school of practical spirituality. And when I was with him, we discussed this a lot, that what is this practical spirituality? And he used to explain us that because, you know, spirituality stays a lot in people's head. So it's all about these certain concepts and beliefs and, okay, that this is what it means to be spiritual, or that is what it means to be spiritual. Like, you might be a yoga practitioner or a mantra practitioner or even a meditation practitioner, and people build a lot of identity around that. What happens is that when we are in normal life, we build a certain identity out of our careers, out of our profession. I'm so and so, I'm this, I'm that, I'm a musician, I'm a yoga teacher. So everything becomes a strong identity. And ego builds upon that. And then one goes on the path of meditation. So one considers himself on the path of yoga. Then one starts calling himself, I'm a yogi, I'm a sadhak, I'm a meditationer, I'm a this, that. But when he used to tell us that when you see them in the normal life, everything is hodgepodge and chaos and not like an integrated conscious approach to life. So his approach has been that how to apply this same dimension of spirituality practically in life. And then only it reflects how really a spiritual person is. And in one way, he or she can be extremely simple, extremely ordinarily, extremely almost invisible. But even in that invisibility, there is a certain light of truth. There is a certain light of the real. There is a certain reflection of awareness and consciousness. And such people don't carry any banner. Such people don't carry any strong identity that, look at me, I am on this path. They are almost absolutely absent. In India, we sometimes come across these people who are so invisible, but they might be in the highest state of yoga. But if you look at them, they are in a marketplace bargaining with a vegetable seller. And you may wonder why an awakened being would be like that, but that is what the simplicity of this person, that he might be in that highest state of being, but in the normal life, he is totally ordinary and simple and down to earth. And he is total in everything. There is no lack of passion there. Many times I've heard this story of Swami Ramakrishna, an awakened being who existed in east of India around Kolkata. There is a story that he was very, very passionate about food. He loved food. And as soon as he would get hungry, he would run to the kitchen and he would ask his wife, Sharda, that Ma Sharda, Ma, what is the food today? Tell me, just bring it. I'm very hungry. And he would really enjoy the food. And then one time Ma Sharda asked him that Swami, you are such a giant enlightened being, you have so many disciples, people really respect you, they really revere you. So does it look good that you are so attached to food and you are always, you know, craving for good food? And so, as I remember, when I read these stories when I was a child, And I remember that in that story, Ramakrishna answers Ma Sharda that he said, "My dear, you don't understand. This is the way I keep myself kind of connected to this world of Maya. I have to have some kind of bond which keeps me on this earth plane. So I have created this attachment with the food. If I even lose this attachment with the food, I will be basically disconnecting that thread. And then it will be very difficult for me to be in this body, because basically there is no more a need for me to be in this body. The highest purpose of being in this body has been served. The awakening has happened. I have known my true nature. So for me, I could easily leave this body now. But to be able to somehow finish my karma and my duration of a normal natural life, I have to create a certain kind of a bondage to the plane, the earth plane." So you see, in that way, many enlightened beings are total into what they are doing in normal life, but ultimately they are completely detached. So being spiritual or understanding spirituality is not really all these hi-fi things and going around telling people, "I'm a yogi and I'm this." No, no. In the path of Sufism, they say that if you are practicing, if your right hand is practicing something, your left hand should not know about it. You should be so secretive about your practice. And one should understand, friends, that you know, when one goes, the mind and the ego is such a mechanism that they like to not only survive but boost themselves on any damn idea. So let's say if there is a successful businessman or entrepreneur or in whatever profession they are successful, so then the ego builds on that okay, I'm a successful, I'm rich, I'm famous, I'm prestigious, this, that. And suppose the same person leaves all of that and goes on the path of spirituality, becomes a meditator, renounces anything, everything. Then the same ego will now survive on the thought that now I'm a renouncer. Now I've given up everything. Now I'm a meditator. Now I'm path. So the ego is still surviving, earlier surviving on the idea, the false idea of success, name, fame. And now the same ego is now getting nourishment from the idea of renunciation and being spiritual and being meditator. So contradictory to both these things, the real spirituality is not to get attached to any of this. Our guru was always explaining that it is to become like a mirror, become mirror-like, where one simply reflects everything. And he used to give this beautiful analogy that when you stand in front of a mirror, however you are, mirror simply reflects. Mirror doesn't tell you that, today you are looking good, or today you are, you are not in your brightest spirit or something. There is no judgment there. And if a person can come to this simple quality of reflecting, mirroring, then I understand that is, to me, is being spiritual, or to be really on the path of spirituality. Simple, ordinary, silent, no announcements, no banners of great identities, nothing. You are simply ordinary. You're doing what is needed to be done with totality, with awareness, consciousness, dedication, sincerity, commitment, love. And then it doesn't require much. Then whether one recognizes or not, but then you are spiritual. Then you are on the real path of spirituality.
What do you think about those people that visited India maybe some years ago and maybe stayed around a few months and came back here to Europe and to the US especially and started offering satsang? What is your opinion of this?
Well, in India, satsang is a really highly recommended tool for any seeker of truth, seeker of spirituality, seeker of real. Satsang means the company of the truth, being in the company of the truth. And that can only happen in the presence of a saint, someone who has realized the truth, someone who is awakened, someone who is enlightened. And friends, it is really a long journey. This journey can continue for many births sometimes. So it is actually hard to believe that if someone goes to India just for a few months and then starts giving satsang here in the West. For us, having grown up in India, it's a little hard to believe, because I'm not saying that it cannot happen in a period of few months to somebody. No, that's not the case. It all depends on one's own state of being, and also what kind of work one has done on himself or herself in this life, maybe in previous lives. So sometimes, you know, that last point is needed and one just comes in contact with an awakened being and the door opens. But that is a very, very rare case. In most of the cases, it's a long, long journey. And until and unless a guru tells the disciple that, okay, now you have arrived, then only that permission of what we call satsang is given. Until then, it is dangerous to be in company of such blind and unaware, unconscious people, unripened people, because satsang is a huge responsibility as far as the person who is offering such a thing. So unless and until you really, really feel that, yes, this is a person who is really going to shatter my beliefs and concepts and all the ideas that I've collected over this life and many lives. It is, you know, not everything on the journey of spirituality is pleasant. On the contrary, spiritual journey is mostly unpleasant. I'm not trying to scare anybody, but this is how it is. The real picture, it is like that. Of course, it can be smoothened with many different things depending on your guru and teacher and on the path. But ultimately, it's like peeling your skin. So if somebody is offering a very pleasant, goody-goody, happy journey, then most probably he or she is not the right person, because it's not about having good time. It's about really knowing the true nature of the self, which is a little bit of an arduous process. So my humble suggestion would be to be really vigilant and careful and really inquiring into what is really being offered, and then you can choose whether to be part of it or not. Also, one has to see that a lot of these things are being commercialized. I'm not saying that there is no price for certain things, but at the same time, you have to see that if there is a commercial aspect, if a certain wasted interest of yours is being fulfilled, then you have to really know that, no, then I'm not in the right place. Because a vested interest of a person could be that one wants to build a career, one wants to make money, nothing wrong with that. But, you know, as a true teacher, a true guru is not supposed to give you all that. A true teacher usually takes away a lot of bullshit from your life so that the real can be given. So it's better to stay away from a place where your vested interests are being fulfilled and nurtured and nourished. And, you know, all these things of certification, it's not how it is in India. Spirituality or being on the path of spirituality is a lifetime commitment. Not only these lives, sometimes many lives. Our gurus have always talked about having patience of 108 lives. So, and it's a, you know, Osho used to say spirituality is not meant for everybody. It's a luxury. So it is a luxury because when you have lived everything possibly in the life and still realize that actually none of this is really bringing me what I want, then you are really ready to be on the path of spirituality. Because once it is understood that all these things are not really the real source of bliss, then one starts looking in the right place. I would like to end this conversation with a beautiful story from a Sufi saint, Rabia. Rabia used to be this female saint in Kashmir, an amazing saint and a very rebellious spirit. It is said that she used to go around naked, but still people, not only that they didn't mind, they used to respect her for that rebellious spirit. So there is a story that one time Rabia was outside her hut. She was looking for something. So, you know, because people respected her, so some people came to her and asked her that, Rabia, what are you looking for? And Rabia said that, I'm looking for a needle which I lost. So people said, okay, we will also help you. We'll start looking for it. So they start looking around where Rabia was looking. And after 2-3 hours, nobody found anything. And then they asked Rabia, but do you remember where you lost your needle? And Rabia said, yes, I lost it inside the hut. And then people said, but then why are we looking here when the needle is lost there? And Rabia said, but that's what you people do. You are looking for something which is not there. So I thought, then you guys must be right. So now I'm doing the same thing. So that was her way of teaching the people that if you want to look for something, then you have to look in the right place. And spirituality is about looking for the right thing in the right place.